Insert joke about Summer Rugby League being the future here, and welcome to this week's Total Rugby League show. And round the table here to discuss a number of postponements as well as some of the matches that did happen last weekend. We're joined by Mr. Aaron Bauer.
Hi.
Alex Davis is here.
Hello.
And Matthew Shaw makes a welcome return.
Hello.
So hello everyone and welcome to this week's Total Rugby League show, and yes, loads of things to talk about this week. We're going to be talking about the Super League matches for round 2.5, is that not
two?
Its official name?
Two?
Just two, three, I don't know. That's coming up anyway shortly. We're also going to be discussing the Championship, which I know many users on the message board will be pleased to hear, and we're also going to be discussing League One as Gareth Walker will be joining us for a bit of a fixture preview for that one and only League One match which will be taking place this weekend for the big League One season kickoff. Speaking of the Challenge Cup, we're going to be joined by Colonel Tom Marsden from the British Army, who's going to be talking about their historic ongoing Challenge Cup run. And we're going to be talking about Rugby League in Manchester with Matt Valentine from the Manchester Rangers Community Foundation. But before all of that, where should we start? Shall we start by talking about Thursday night? No, let's talk about the weather. Does the season need to kick off a bit later?
Yeah, well, first, can I just say we can confirm we have at least one listener, because I've had a review of this podcast.
Oh!
About me.
About you!
Expletive laden. Apparently, I talk insert expletive most of the time. Apparently,
anyone could have told
well,
you.
Well, I don't disagree.
And it's a listener from Halifax, apparently, which doesn't surprise me.
Additionally,
Matthew.
No, it's not. It's not. No, well, no. Word has come to me from a third party that.
But Matt definitely listens to the podcast.
Matt, but yeah, well, he will do to bump the numbers up.
I'm not one of these that says I told you so. But
hey, Aaron, don't be afraid. Don't be ashamed, because the listenership is going up and up and up week on week.
Really,
yeah,
great.
Four figures nowadays, mate.
You keep talking expletives.
I'm going to have to buy a pair of Matthew Shaw sunglasses at some point, aren't I?
Just
and an half a day of a coat.
Anyway.
Don't forget the pants.
Well,
there's nothing that can be done.
It does need to start later, yeah. We need to have a shorter season. But unfortunately, we can't, because we play too many games. So it would be ideal if we started in line with the NRL, went March to September, October, had a nice meaty off-season. We could all forget about rugby league for a couple of months rather than a couple of minutes. But unfortunately, while we're stuck in this TV deal with this structure and this many games that we've got to fit in, it's just not happening.
14 teams, that gets rid of two rounds?
Yeah, two, definitely
which,
two.
Well,
so then we'll start in middle of Feb.
Which is, for me, fine.
I mean, January and early February, what do you expect? You know, it's
Storm Dennis is on its way this weekend, I believe, as well. So,
yeah, it is, yeah.
What,
yeah,
he used to make fire engines.
Can I ask a legitimate question?
Yeah,
speaking hypothetically, if the rearranged Challenge Cup games get postponed again, what happens? Because the Challenge Cup games are...
Play midweek.
That's
all you've got.
Yeah. That's all they could do, isn't
it? All you've got. And then your short turnaround argument. Get your headlines ready, because that's going to be getting used.
At least we'll see more summer rugby games. Because like I know
some rugby klaxon. Can you put a klaxon in for when
twice it's been mentioned?
Can you say?
I think quite a few of the games that have been postponed have been rearranged for like Challenge Cup semi final time,
which will be awkward when the rearranged games all feature Challenge Cup semi finalists.
Yeah, well,
which is bound to happen. So we're going to talk about the Challenge Cup later. As I said earlier, we will be joined by the British Army Rugby League team. But let's talk about Super League for this weekend, kicking things off on Thursday night. The TV game, it's Wigan against Toronto. Both teams now desperate for a win. I felt like
Is
that Top Sport
narrative?
Wasn't it narrative? Good. Yeah.
I tell you what. I'm quite lucky that I get to access like extended highlights of games. How bad were Wigan on Friday night?
Was it all down to the penalties that they were giving away, Alex? They did give a lot of silly penalties away.
They did. You can't give away penalties in possession, and they did a couple of times. But Castleford really didn't. They didn't allow Wigan to get into the stride. Cass didn't give them anything. Didn't give them any field position. Didn't drop the ball. Wigan were. They got beat up the middle.
Cass won for a second week running, and I don't think you'll disagree with this. Cass won for a second week running, playing very simple rugby, but just doing the basics very well.
Yeah,
did the basic principles of rugby league very well and won the game.
Yeah, they did.
I think
Wigan got caught out. They've got a lot of young players with experience in their team, but I think their discipline shone through. Players like Morgan Smithies and Oliver Partington were giving away silly penalties. Mm-hmm. which cost them in the end.
They're lacking some seniority in the pack, aren't they, at the minute?
Yeah, Lachlan was pretty much the only senior player in their pack.
Yeah,
at the minute.
They're missing and they miss Flower, don't they? Burgess is obviously a big miss. It's a tough ask, you know, when you're going in. And look, I know Wigan's kids are predominantly very good and they adjust to Super League quickly. But when there's three or four of them trying to do it at the same time, maybe even more if you throw the likes of Harry Smith in and stuff like that, it's a tough ask.
Well, yeah, Wigan's youngsters, they always seem like they've got a huge amount of hunger to throw themselves about. And that's good, but it can also lead to ill discipline, which it did.
Now, they're taking on Toronto this weekend. Toronto got a bit closer than they did in the opening game when they played Salford at the weekend, but still winless.
It was an improved performance, here, but they're still some way off, I think.
They're a long way off. And they're getting...
They were close, though, weren't they? Salford didn't really seal the deal until the last 10 minutes, did they?
But I didn't think Salford were great either.
No. Wasn't a great game. No. But the story is already what most people thought it would be with Toronto. They're down to 19 already. Yeah. They're already down to 19-man squads. If they get a couple of... They're fortunate that they didn't get any head knocks or anything like that on Saturday, because with the short turnaround to Thursday, those players would have been
let's not forget, in that 19 is Bodine Thompson, yeah, who they said before the start of the season was going to be out for 6 weeks. Yeah. So technically...
So they basically got one player to pick from in terms of a reserve option.
They could have two Canadians on the way shortly, though, if news reports in this week's paper to be believed.
They need players, whoever they are.
Well,
Quinn Naguat is going to be one.
In the dispensation specifically about...
Two Canadians.
Which is
I think it's fair to say they won't comment publicly. I don't think I am wrong in saying that Toronto are, I wouldn't say angry, but very, very disappointed with how this salary cap story has gone about. From initially having a proposal that would have seen them get £105,000 worth of dispensation, and they're now allowed to sign two under-21 Canadian players. Now, you tell me how many under-21 Canadian players that you will be able to find that have even played rugby league at professional level. Yes.
Wakefield Trinity's
Jack
Croft.
Here's a question for you. Can it be more than two?
No, it has to be two.
Yeah, two.
They'll sign Quinn Naguat, who's played, I believe, 5 rugby league games.
I didn't even think he played that many.
I think he went to London Scholars. So I think he's played 5 rugby league games. And then they'll have to try and find someone else. So I can understand why they are somewhat disappointed with how this has turned out, thinking that they would initially get £105,000 worth of salary cap dispensation. They, let's face it, have not got that. So
Chase Stanley's back though this weekend.
Well, is he? He's not in the squad.
No, he's not in the squad.
Oh, right, I'll scrub that bit off.
This is an interesting question.
Scrub that off.
But no, don't scrub it off. An interesting question.
Write it back in there.
The new rule is you can name a 21-man squad, but you can't change it.
What about if they add players 20 and 21?
Does it count?
I would think you'd still foul the rules because you would just include them, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you just include
them? I think it's a question that probably needs to be asked.
I don't think
But I'm with you. Why would you just not
name him? And if you don't play him, you don't play him.
Yeah, I agree.
They're in bother.
How are they actually going to line up?
Yeah.
Serious question.
Straight line.
What is their team lineup going to be?
Well, they're going to have to probably do something like play Blake Wallace off the bench as a dummy half or Gareth O'Brien.
I think Maloudi will play fullback. I think O'Brien will play halfback and Wallace will play centre. I can't see what else he can do.
The long and short of it, this is a shambles of a situation.
Okay, it is a shambles. So that leads me to my more wider question. At what point do Super League then have to make the effort to say to Toronto?
Well, the thing is though, because Super League have been supportive of dispensation, it's the clubs who are against it.
No, this is the point, though. I mean,
and why would
Robert Elston isn't going to be, you know, too chuffed if Toronto are lining up with no interchange.
The issue the clubs,
the Northern Hemisphere's Premier competition,
and it comes back to the weakness of the governance in this game once again. It's always reactive, not proactive. This should have been brought up months and months.
Now, Toronto did bring this up in the off season, though.
It got brought up in the lead up to the championship grand final.
Yeah.
But why was it still only being resolved in the league?
It should have been sorted in November.
It should have been sorted out the week after Toronto were promoted.
If you go back to that run up to the £1 million game, there was no guarantee they were actually going to be playing to go in Super League.
However, as I keep saying, the sport is too reactive. active when it comes to governance of the game, and it is not.
It's weak. It's weak. Yeah, it is weak. But playing devil's advocate, if they would have got the 105 grand that they were expecting to get, what would they have used that on? How many players?
Probably three. But they'd have been able to sign.
And well, the quality of those players would have been.
They'd sign Quinn Naguati, who's going to be bottom end.
Yeah, 20 maybe, right. 20. So 240 grand players.
Yeah. You don't get a lot for it.
No, you don't get a lot for your money.
But you get a bit more than what they're going to get.
You get someone on the bench.
You get bodies, don't you, I suppose. But I just think there's a bit more. I just think there's a bit more to it all. And, you know, they've had the cap.
But what I don't understand is, why did they loan Greg Worthington out?
But then you look at the squad. But then you look at the
squad.
But then you look at the squad, and they're not exactly light on three quarters, are they?
Wallace plays centre. I'd argue that.
Yeah,
they are.
Well, Malouda will play centre. I think.
I think he'll play fullback, and I think O'Brien will play halfback.
Well, that game will be on telly, and it'll be very interesting. Wigan against Toronto on Thursday night. The TV game on Friday, Salford taking on Huddersfield. Can we talk about Reece Williams' trial that's gone viral?
Mo Salah, which is ridiculous, but.
I mean, he doesn't really look like Mo Salah.
No, he doesn't.
Everyone's saying he runs like him, and he definitely doesn't run like him.
No.
I would wager Mo Salah's probably a bit nippier.
Maybe.
Over a short distance. Over 100 metres, Reece Williams is definitely quicker.
I would also assume that, and I'm not trying to say that Reece Williams is heavy, because he's absolutely not, but I would say that Reece Williams looks far more bulked up.
Oh, he's definitely bigger than Mo Salah.
If there were a weightlifting competition between Reece Williams and Mo Salah, I would not be backing Mo Salah. No offence.
If Mo Salah's running into the defensive line, he's not going.
It's an interesting game.
Mo Salah, may or may not
look
have
at Aaron here, bless him, trying to bring it back to the match itself. Go on.
It's an interesting game in that Huddersfield were great against Catalans, by all accounts. I didn't see the game, but they were great. Oh, obviously, no one saw the game. They haven't played for 2 weeks. I suspect Huddersfield would have probably wanted to have got out there and played last week. So they've had a couple of weeks, a little mini pre-season again after one game. Salford, fair to say, probably needed a win. Needed a performance. Maybe they didn't quite get that, but they got a win. I'm really interested to see how Huddersfield go, because again, allegedly, they were very good in the south of France. Caesar was brilliant. This will be the first chance for everyone, really, to see him, see what he's all about. So I'm looking forward to seeing Huddersfield. It's a big game in terms of the battle at the bottom already, isn't it? I know you're not wanting to put teams in particular positions after week two and three, but you would suspect them both to be in and around the bottom five, maybe. Bottom five, bottom six.
Bottom half.
Bottom half. So if Huddersfield could go two wins from two to start the season, it'd be a great place.
Well, I think these are the two teams, and this, I go back to what I predicted at the start of the season. These are the two teams that could make the five that people aren't expecting to be in the five. So I'm with Aaron. I'm looking forward to seeing Huddersfield. I genuinely excited
I'm
to
looking
see
forward
what they're
to seeing
all about.
Salford. They've got a lot of new players. It'll take time
for
them to gel.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying about the Toronto match not being too convincing, but they look pretty good going forward.
Yeah.
Well, they play good Brendan
Rodgers. That hasn't changed.
No, that hasn't
changed.
They
still try and play rugby the right way.
Also on Friday night, Leeds against Hull KR. And let's talk about the Hull derby then. I mean, nearly 20,000 there. Yeah. And
what a night.
What a game. Hull KR, I think, scored possibly try of the season contender.
Well, after 2 weeks, they scored the try of the season.
Try of the season so far.
To label that.
No, I'm calling it. Show two of the new season, Hull KR's Ben Crooks.
It was try of the season so far.
No, try of the month.
It was try of the fortnight.
Okay.
There we go.
I think it was brilliant.
It was a brilliant try.
But there will be better tries. It will be in the
competition at the end of the year.
Okay. It won't win, but it will be in the competition.
Yeah. Reece Williams won't bad.
Hull KR have surprised me, actually. I thought 19 or 20 new signings, a ridiculous turnover. That just leads to the notion and the narrative that it's going to take them weeks to get their act together. They look like they've been playing together for a good few months.
And they look good.
They look good going forward. I think Ellis and Brayley have surprised me in terms of how quickly they've settled as a half-back pairing. Mm. They look really good. Hull KR were the better team for the first hour of that game.
Yeah.
Hull's quality just showed through in the end. I'm sure we'll talk about Hull and sort of what that means for them. But having beat Wakefield on the opening weekend and then run Hull very close at Hull, I think Hull KR fans will go to Leeds thinking they could get another scout this
weekend. I think what's quite encouraging for Hull KR is it's clear that they're trying to play around teams, which they have to do because they've no size in the middle. They've no Masso, they've not signed anyone, there's no Haraki. They know that Garrett's not going to play week in, week out. So they try to spread the ball quick, and Toronto are trying to do the same, but Hull KR having a damn sight more success at doing it, and they're playing at a time of year when it doesn't suit playing round teams.
Yeah, yeah.
So you would think as the season develops and the tracks get a little bit harder, as they say, that it will suit them more. So I think it's quite an encouraging start. What I think they do have to be still wary of, though, is that teams are going to suss a way out to constrain them down the middle, and that's when the fear will come for me with Hull.
They've also got such a large core of young players, which is great for the future and very encouraging, that they're probably only a couple of injuries away from having to blood some kids that they probably wouldn't want to throw in yet. Case in point being, I think there's a worry over Adam Quinlan from Friday, which I would suggest probably means Will Dagger goes in. Will Dagger's probably able to hold his own at this level. I'm not suggesting he couldn't, but if they were to lose a couple more, you know, a couple more forwards, like Matt says, they're already very light in the pack, very, very inexperienced in terms of Super League, then you would really start to worry for them.
There is little doubt in that Hull KR, and Danny Maguire said this, they know they still need to sign a big forward, yeah. And they do. Their encouraging start doesn't hide away from the fact that they still need to do that.
How big is this game for Leeds, given the start that they've had?
Huge, because if they lose another one, then it just begins to spiral out of control sometimes. The performance against Hull was really disappointing, and of course they didn't play at the weekend, so the fans have had 2 weeks to sort of remember that performance, and they need a performance at home, I think, to get their season back on track.
I'm going
to
be honest with you, I'm tipping Hull KR.
I'd tip Leeds. I think they'll bounce back.
On the subject of tips, by the way,
okay,
Matthew Shaw's prediction of Castleford to finish in the bottom four is off to a strong start.
Well, let's move
strong
to Castleford now.
Going in very, very early.
Good segue there, Aaron. Catalans against Castleford is the game on Saturday. Castleford, though, have got off to a flyer, haven't they?
They've done well. They had a lot of players out for that Wigan game, and they managed to get a win.
12 first teams.
And the key, I think, was that last year Castleford, their spine was decimated. This year, their spine is as strong as it's going to be.
It's the only thing that's staying the same.
You've got Rankin, McShane, Richardson, Truman, and they looked a lot more balanced with two genuine halfbacks, one on each side. So it wasn't just Truman that was doing everything. Richardson was doing things as well. I don't think he's had a brilliant start, Richardson. He's just done all right.
Yeah, and he's complimented Truman on it.
Exactly, yeah. He's complimented Truman, and McShane looked a lot better as well, to be honest. But it was all about discipline. Their discipline in terms of giving away penalties, but also with the ball. They didn't do anything silly. They just ground out a win.
Been impressed with Chase Blair.
Yeah.
Looks better
that
try.
Played centre on Friday night.
That try, he just
looks good.
Obviously, engaged the Wigan defence about 7 or 8 metres out, shoved both of them off and ran in.
But it looks classic case, isn't it? A player arriving mid-season.
Did Blair play centre? I was sure
he played
centre.
He played back row first game.
He looked far better against Toronto in the back row.
Yeah.
He played
centre the other night because Matauti was banned.
But the other player that I was really impressed with was Daryl
Olfert. Yeah.
Daryl Olfert, he had a huge amount of metres coming out of his own end. But the one thing that did worry me a little bit about Cass was Olfert's and Blair's defensive partnership. They were flying in, and they got away with it because Wigan didn't have the quality to finish off those moves when Blair and Olfert were flying in.
They've got some good depth, and I think when it gets to May and June and teams are really starting to struggle with numbers and struggling with injuries, I think that's where Castleford, for me, will probably have the edge for the five, and it's where I give them a little bit of a nudge in that regard.
Bit too early to judge Catalans because they're not on telly, so we don't really...
Played one game.
Yeah. That's our comprehensive review.
I have always said, I say it every year, let's have a look and judge teams properly at Easter.
Let's talk about Sunday's matches. Rather. Let's talk about the first biggie, because they're both quite big games, aren't they? Hull FC against St Helens.
Game of the season so far.
St Helens, obviously, were nilled, which doesn't happen that often, does it?
4 years last time they were nilled.
Was it that long?
Yeah, 2016.
How did they react to that at Hull?
Well, they've got problems, haven't they? And problems that Justin Holbrook never really had to deal with. I was saying the other day, it'd be interesting how Gold Coast deal with it. If Gold Coast can handle injuries well and they can keep their key players fit throughout the course of this
They'll
year, maybe Holbrook.
Bottom.
Well, yeah. maybe Holbrook's onto something because all of a sudden, for going 2 years and being the envy of most clubs, and clubs actually trying to find out what the secret was to St Helens keeping their players fit, I think it was seven of.
I'm laughing because I went to St Helens' media day for one reason and one reason only, to speak to St Helens' medical team about how they keep all the players fit.
Good.
And ever since then, they've dropped like flies. I'm like, for God's sake.
I think there were seven of the team that won the grand final weren't out there at one stage when Percival went off on Thursday night.
They've ruled them out at World Club Challenge, haven't they?
They're in bother for that World Club Challenge. I wonder, do we know who of the ones that are out is likely to be fit? Coot, you would think, would be fit, because they said that was a couple of weeks,
Knowles,
didn't they?
Knowles
potentially. Knowles is a big one. Knowles is one of their most underrated players. He gives them some real...
What happened to Walmsley in the warm-up?
His calf went... Now, they don't know whether it was a tear or a pull. That was the noise after the game. Obviously, if it's a tear, then he's gone, isn't he? But I don't want to be so over-dramatic as to say they need a response on Sunday. They probably don't need a win, because the results aren't the end of the world at this stage of the season, but you would certainly want to see some level of performance from St Helens, or some level of response, with the World Club Challenge, 6 days away by that stage. Having been nilled, that doesn't happen very often. You would expect it to stir a response from St Helens. So,
Christian Wolfe is in the paper as saying he wants to stay on as Tongan coach, as long as it doesn't interfere with the St Helens work. That is going to be a bit of a juggling act.
Well, if I was St Helens, I would want him solely focused on St Helens. But if they are confident that he can do the work he needs and can do that on top in his own time, then fair enough. But that's for them to judge, isn't it? And for him. As long as they're winning games, I don't think they'll really care, to be honest.
Well, one team who are winning games is Hull, the host of this game against St Helens at the weekend. And they're just playing so well, aren't they, Alex? It's just...
They've made a lot of signings, particularly in the forwards, and they're coming up trumps, but also players like Josh Griffin, who was excellent on Friday night. He's playing really well. The NRL players have signed on the face of it, apart from Martu, they're not stars of the game, but they look it.
Ligi Sal
and Tavita
Sasa. Has been great. Andre Savelio.
Yeah.
Martin said something interesting a couple of weeks ago, where he said about Hull FC, if they're doing well, rugby league's doing well. They've just had a crowd of nearly 20,000. Yeah. There's going to be another big crowd this weekend. So
there's certainly one of those clubs that I apply to.
I've said it before that I want to see a new winner of this competition at some stage, preferably as soon as possible. And that's not to disrespect St Helens, Leeds and Wigan, who have won it before. But I just think the buzz it would create, if you, theoretically, let's say if you had a Hull Warrington or a Hull Castleford Grand Final and you were guaranteeing a new winner... Hull in particular is a place where, as Martin said, it had explored, it'd take off to a ridiculous degree. If Hull go, let's say, you know, Hull win the first six, seven, eight games, by the time you get to Easter, Hull will be pulling 15,000 in. It's the kind of place where it's just got the potential to snowball overnight. And I think there was a lot of eyes on Lee Radford and a lot of pressure on Lee Radford early doors. And I think he admitted it himself that... You know, they've spent a lot of money this year. They've got the squad that they want now. They've sort of moved on the players who were maybe a little bit over the hill, maybe whose time had gone, and they've got a fresh, sort of more exciting, more dynamic squad. And they've delivered so far. You can only judge teams on what we've seen so far. Some teams have underperformed. Some teams have caught the eye. Hull have definitely
caught
the eye.
This certainly seems like it is a massive opportunity for them. They had the big turnover. They got rid of a lot of players, and they got in some really good new players.
I'm also really pleased, just to go back to Savelio, that he seems to be shining, because he came through at St Helens and he was tipped for big things. It never really happened. He ended up going on loan to Castleford. He went to the NRL, went to Brisbane. Then he come back to Warrington. It never really happened. He went to Warrington, then he went to Brisbane.
Yeah,
He's had a lot of injuries. But it's great to see a young English player who was tipped for really, really big things 5 or 6 years ago to start to make a bit of a mark. I hope he can hold down a place in that side.
The concern for Hull, and I said it last week, is just injuries.
Well, they've lost Sate for a couple of games now, haven't they?
That's suspension, isn't it?
Yeah, that's suspension,
Mau went down.
So Matongo or Fash would come back in, wouldn't they?
Yeah, but it's just that they've picked up a few early. It's only a few, I mean, you know, but...
I'm interested to see what they're doing with Fanua playing off the bench. You know, is that going to be a thing, or because you're not dropping Tuma Vavi or Griffin at the minute?
He's certainly an impact player off the bench.
He certainly is.
Griffin's been great.
Yeah, Griffin has been great. I think Griffin's been great for a good year or so now.
About he's coming close to 12 months.
Radford's championed him for Great Britain and England before, and I think it's starting to look like a good call.
Let's talk about the final match then for Super League round 2.5-3, if you will. Wakefield against Warrington on Sunday.
Well, Warrington, I know they've only won one game, but they've probably, along with Hull, have probably been the standout team so far this year. So, It's another challenge for them, but I thought they were obviously excellent in Dillon Saints, and they were pretty excellent against Wigan despite not winning that game. Superb.
Yeah, they look good. It's rare a team wins one from two, and you say they've been fantastic, but I think given the circumstances and what they've dealt with,
that defending in the corner where they drove the lad over the line.
What do they do in that Ashton?
He's probably going to miss out, isn't he? He's probably going to miss out, unfortunately, just for a lack of games. You're not going to leave Widdop out. You're certainly going to have to put Ratchford back to fullback to accommodate Widdop. You've got three high-profile international players.
I would reward him with a place on the bench, at least.
Well, the one thing he's got this year in his favour is he can go and play reserve rugby and he can keep playing. Mm. I didn't see Hull KRV Wakefield on the opening weekend. By all accounts, Wakefield weren't great. But you would suspect if Warrington go to Wakefield and perform anything like how they have in the opening two rounds, they'll win the game. Yeah. The weather's going to be a bit of a curveball again, isn't it? Sounds like there's going to be more bad weather coming this weekend.
Storm Dennis.
Whether that reduces it to a game of who can
bit of a leveler.
Hold on to the ball the best. In conditions like that, if Wakefield had a fully fit side, you would probably fancy them to get in the wrestle and compete a bit because they've got a big pack. However, without Fifita, without Arona, I don't think Green will play. There's a few big men missing. So, again, you'd lean towards Warrington, wouldn't you? Just on the basis of how they've both performed so far.
Well, that's the Super League, and those matches taking place this weekend, and there'll be a plethora of match reviews and that kind of thing in next week's League Express. But just to talk about the Championship momentarily, because there was only four matches which took place at the weekend. Four teams now with 100% records after those two games. Lee, who were pretty comprehensive over Sheffield. Toulouse were pretty dominant against Oldham. Widnes overcame Batley, and the London Broncos dug out a win against Whitehaven.
When you consider... yeah, it's so hard, isn't it, after a couple of rounds, but Sheffield only lost to Halifax by one and then got tonked by Lee. So that would suggest that Lee was pretty sharp.
Lee have got 94 points now scored in two matches.
That was certainly more impressive than the Dewsbury win. Witness have obviously started great, but
yeah,
they're
the ones that have caught my eye.
But they've only beat teams you would expect they would beat.
But there was a crowd of 3.5 and
it's great to see
Witness looking like they're on the
and
feet.
And it's probably
again.
Also a better week for Whitehaven, because obviously they lost the opening game
closer.
To Swinton.
They were winning at half time, weren't they, against London?
And to run London that close, I think that's a promising sign.
Well, Witness have got London at home this weekend. Two teams who play on the plastic pitch.
Again, and you can't look into it too much, but London, you're probably thinking, scrape past Bradford.
I think I'd take London some time. They've had a lot of turnover, haven't they?
Well, I didn't scrape past Whitehaven, did they? But it wasn't a hammering as you'd suspect. So London, and they won't be concerned, but it's not been, even though they've got the wins, it hasn't been the most convincing start by them. Witness London, that looks like
that's a good benchmark from both, isn't it, to see where they both are. But you look at London, and there's a lot of unrecognisable names from the team who performed in Super League last year, so there is a lot of turnover. Kieran Dixon's having to play fullback because Ollie Ashall-Bott's not fit. Jacob Ogden's playing, Josh Walters, Toya Goda, Corey Aston, James Meadows is now playing, you know, Dan Norman.
It's not
that's
gonna, yeah.
before no, you even right. get into the pack. So London, I think, are a team that if they can get some wins early doors, by the time they get to summer, they'll be in a good position. I would expect them to be in the top two or three.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Well, matches this weekend in Championship all taking place on Sunday, as we understand.
Oh, busy day.
Batley Bulldogs will be hosting Swinton Lions. Bradford hosting Featherstone Rovers.
That's an interesting game after Bradford's good start. London.
Halifax against Dewsbury. Lee Centurions against the York City Knights.
Now, that's another interesting game.
That's game of the weekend, isn't it?
Probably. But Lee York's a Widnes London and Lee York.
You've got three games there where you're looking at six teams that you would suspect would all finish in the top half.
Well, if you cut it down to Widnes, London and Lee York, you're looking at four teams who could feasibly be in the top five, aren't you? Yeah. Throw Toulouse in and then, you know.
Well, speaking of Toulouse, they're travelling to Sheffield in their first away game of the season, so that'll be interesting to see how Toulouse cope with a chip on the road after their two starts.
But to Doncaster as well.
Yeah, then Catalans, hopefully.
Whitehaven against Oldham will be the game on our league.
That's a big game, an important game.
And finally, Widnes will be taking on London Broncos. Big game there. But there's also going to be, excitingly, some rearranged round three matches in the Challenge Cup as Storm... What was it called last week?
Kiara.
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 Kiara? Kiara?
Kiara.
It's Chiara, because it's C-I-A-R-A.
Yeah, yeah. Chiara, which is sounds beautiful in my Mancunian accent, doesn't it? Chiara.
But character on Coronation Street, isn't she?
Very good. But there were some matches which did take place last weekend that beat the weather, and some big wins, the most notable of which took place at Aldershot, as the British Army were victorious over Inchrose Bridge by 34 points to 22, which takes the British Army into round four, where they'll be taking on either Rochdale Hornets or York Acorn. It's the furthest the Army's ever gone. So let's hear now from the chairman of Army Rugby League. On Tuesday, I caught up with Colonel Tom Marsden.
Yeah, it was a brilliant day. The weather was relatively kind to us, noting that the storm further north affected some of the other games over the weekend. But there was quite a bit of wind, which I think affected the kicking games of both teams. I thought we started pretty well, but then Inchrose Bridge came back really strongly and showed their sort of rugby league nous by playing some good tactical kicking, good running, and using their sets of six well to kind of turn us round and do some interesting things that I think showed they're more used to playing rugby league than potentially some of our players are. But then I think in the second half, I don't know what happened at half time. There was obviously a bit of a chat from the head coach, and we came out sort of all guns blazing. And again, I think that the wind was helpful for us in the second half. And we scored a couple of quick tries. And then I think their sort of heads went down a little bit. And although they came back strongly at the end, I think we'd sort of done enough to get through. But we were delighted, as it's the first time ever from the Army that we've managed to get into the fourth round of the Challenge Cup. So we're absolutely delighted.
I was going to say, I mean, it's historic, this run you've been on, because Inchrose Bridge, you know, cracky community side. You've also beaten Skirlo on the way, Ulton Raiders as well. So, I mean, it's been a cracking run so far. I mean, what's the mood in the camp like?
Yeah, it's really strong, actually. So we've, on the building on the back of the success of the inter-services last year, where we retained the inter-services against the other two, our sister services, the Royal Navy and the RAF. The team then went on tour for the inaugural sort of tri-service New Zealand, Australia and British Army tour. And we went down to Australia, and we were narrowly defeated by Australia. But aside from that, the tour was really successful. So on the back of that, this run in the Challenge Cup's been superb. It's given us a real opportunity for the team to stay together and to get a string of games, which has been really good.
And just a quick mention as well, obviously the game itself was superb, but a particularly good try from Jamie Lang, who's on the list of potential try of the week on our league. I mean, that try was pretty good, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I watched it back. I saw your list of tries in our league, and I would say this, wouldn't I? I think it's got to be in with a shout. I thought it was, good hands, good break, nicely back and forth, and I thought it showed all the skills that both the Army, in terms of decision making, in terms of fitness, in terms of not giving up, but also rugby league in terms of the skills on show. So yeah, gets my vote.
Yeah, absolutely. And how important is this for rugby league within the armed forces? Because obviously the armed forces got a plethora of sporting teams, and how important that is for the armed forces. So how important is it for rugby league and for what the Army's doing here?
Well, Ben, in a couple of areas, I'd just like to highlight that. I think firstly, we're building on success that we've been around for sort of over 20 years now as a Army sport, as rugby league. And the success has come in sort of in many different areas. It encouraged young players to embody the military skills that we, toughness, that courage, decision-making under pressure. All of the traits in rugby league are supported by the skills that we require of our junior soldiers and our junior commanders. So the two are really supportive. But particularly the ladies game has done really well. And you'll be familiar, and your listeners will be familiar, with the success last year of the ladies team getting to the Challenge Shield final and then winning it. And we're trying to build on that success by encouraging more and more female soldiers to take up rugby league. We've also had some real success with some of our ladies players being selected for national squads, both Wales and England. So, I think the sport's growing in the Army, but it's still a relatively small sport in comparison to some of the other bigger sports. But with players numbering in the hundreds, we hope to grow the sport over the next 3 to 4 years.
We did cover the women's final last year, and it was a remarkable run that the women's team went on. But obviously in your squad for the men's team, there's players there with great conference experience, isn't there? So, as news gets out, there's going to be more and more great players being developed by the Army, it looks like.
Yeah, and I think that's important. We're always looking for relationships with community sides and with other sides in the rugby league community. And you know, we've had some experience of dealing with sides all the way through, both female and male players playing for a variety of teams. So we're keen to build those relationships. I'd also just like to say thank you to our sponsors that we've got on board. So you know, the British Legion have been our supporters throughout, and this season we've now had Babcock UK have joined us, and Elbit Systems as well, who are going to pick up sponsoring the ladies team. So those sponsors, and we're always keen for other sponsors who'd be interested in being associated with Army Rugby League to get on board. So if there are people out there who are keen, then just let me know and we can look at that. But certainly in terms of the community game, building with the RFL and the community teams, we're hugely supportive of that, and anything we can do to help and encourage, then we'll do so.
And of course, the history isn't done yet, is it? The history making isn't done yet. Obviously, the fourth rounder awaits, and either Rochdale Hornets or York Acorn, you get to watch that this weekend, I'd imagine, from afar. So, looking forward to that one, whoever you get.
Yeah, we are, and both have got an attraction. So it'll be exciting to see who progresses. And then we've also got the ladies playing Durham, who again are in their inaugural season in the Ladies Challenge Cup as well, towards the end of this month, early March. So it's unusual for us to have kind of two teams kind of on the go in the Challenge Cup at this stage. So it's quite exciting times in the rugby league community. But yeah, we'll be watching from the sidelines this weekend to see who we've got next.
Colonel Tom Marsden there from the British Army, and you can follow the Army on Twitter. Not the Army, but the Army Rugby League. At Army Rugby League on
good
Twitter.
On yeah, fantastic story.
That's what the Challenge Cup's about, isn't
absolutely
it?
Absolutely. Same with Underbank, who I think got Bradford. What an occasion that would have been for Underbank to get a tie at Oddsall in the Challenge Cup. Still a great day for them. I'm pleased Underbank got a good draw. I think it's great. The Army's a brilliant story. If they could get another scalp.
Chance for a few League One clubs to have a run as well. Yeah. There's five all championship ties.
Just fascinated by... Potentially, if the Army, I know it'd be incredibly tough for them to go to Rochdale and win, or York Acorn, by the way. If they could get another scalp and somehow get a Super League team, what an occasion that'd be for the Cup. What a great story for the Cup. As football, anyone who's a football fan knows the FA Cup can throw up some brilliant, brilliant storylines. You don't really get amateur team getting all the way to playing a big boy. In the Challenge Cup, because the gulf is normally too big between semi-pro and amateur.
No, they normally go out at this level.
I remember when Cass were in the second tier and they drew Lock Lane. Yeah, that was an incredible game.
Yeah, there's been a few like that. Halifax got Siddle, didn't they? I'm sure that.
Well, Siddle have got a home game against Keighley or Newcastle.
Yeah, yeah.
Siddle might fancy that. You know, I know, again, it's going to be very tough for them, but...
On their own pitch, if they play it there.
Good luck to the amateur teams.
They might play at the Shea, which would be a leveler for them.
I'd get it. You'd want it at Siddle, wouldn't you?
Well, they played Toronto there.
What a brilliant occasion, that.
But, good on Underbank. They are in the main... They are in the top level of the amateur game, but they're not one of the big, big hitters.
West Bowling's still in as well, aren't they? They got Workington, that got called off.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're still in.
Let's talk about League One, then, because due to these rearrangements here... The opening weekend of League One has basically been moved. There's only one game, as far as I understand it.
We can republish our League One preview in League Express. Easy pages filled.
Now, don't go off what I'm telling you, listener, because I've not properly researched this, but North Wales Crusaders v Doncaster, I think, is the only game this weekend in League One. Anyway, that's not put us off from doing a season preview for Betfred League One. And on Tuesday, I caught up with League Express's very own Gareth Walker. And let's start things off with the Barrow Raiders, beginning with the letter B. Obviously relegated last season, but Paul Crary's kept most of that squad, which makes them a very interesting proposition this season.
Yeah, it does. You know, last year they got quite a few injuries in the Championship at crucial times. I think that contributed to them going down. I would have fancied them to stay up with that squad if they'd been fit every week. And because of that, I think they deserve to be the favourites this year, to be honest. They've kept that squad together. Paul Crary and several of them obviously know exactly what it takes to get out of this division. And I think they look pretty strong. I think guys like Jamie Dalymore and John O'Smith have played so much at this level and been successful in the third tier at different stages that they'll be well placed to be right up there in the promotion race.
A lot of people are pitching Newcastle as the potential favourites this season. What's your take on that side of things? Because they are coming at it from slightly different angles.
Yeah, perhaps. And I mean, I think the thing before I kind of go on to that is that both of these clubs are going to have a lot of local players in their squads. Newcastle's production line is really getting going now. Barrow I've always been very keen on Barrow lads under Paul Crary. So we'll see young lads in both squads emerge, but it's probably the key guys. We mentioned Dalymore and Smith there at Barrow. And you look at Toronto, and if you've got a Bob Bezic, what a signing he is for them. And still Quentin Lalutoga guy there. You know, they're two strike players who have been top players at the very top end of the championship. So Newcastle absolutely deserve to be mentioned in the same breath. And, you know, for me, those are the two standout squads. I'd edge towards Barrow, but you certainly wouldn't rule out Newcastle topping the pile.
It's interesting. Obviously, year on year, there's always development at Newcastle Thunder. But this year, obviously, with the reserve grade, I think they had 8 academy players in that team that beat the Salford reserves last weekend in the reserve championship. So the squad Simon Finnegan's got there up in the northeast is pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, and that kind of stuff shouldn't be forgotten when we're talking about Bezic and Lalutoga guy, and they've signed Brendan Santé from Toulouse. Adam Lawton's a giant of a man. He could be a real big signing on in both a literal and metaphorical sense for them. But they are also producing local northeast lads, and I hope people are aware of that because they're putting a lot of resources into that, and it's a big part of this Super League plan that they have over several years.
Now let's go back to alphabetical order because I was then thinking to myself, who's the third favourite? And then I'm looking at the list, going, there's so many good teams there, isn't there? I'm not even going to make that call. So I'm going to go back to alphabetical order and talk about the Coventry Bears. You touched upon, you know, how good Barrow and Newcastle are at developing their local players. Coventry have made that a staple of their club development over recent years. Alan Robinson in charge now, not just as in charge of the club, but as director of rugby. He's in charge of on the field matters too now. Tom Sang's gone to the London Broncos. So, interesting year ahead for Coventry, I feel like.
Yeah, definite change in direction. You know, Alan Robinson's been at that club. Well, he founded it, so, you know, it's very inception. He's been a key part of it, and you know, he does know what's best for the club, I'm sure. It's an interesting approach to have a director of rugby kind of in overall control and a bit different from most clubs. And as you said there, they are going to put some faith in local guys, which is hugely commendable and a very long-term vision. I do think that's probably going to mean that wins are tough to come by again, but they're always capable of a shock on the day. And I think anybody who underestimates Coventry, particularly in Coventry, can leave themselves open to being stunned.
Now let's talk about the dark horses. And every year, I've been doing the League One show now for about 4 seasons, and every year, Doncaster, the dark horses, always officially the dark horses. That's not changed this season, has it?
Not in some sense, although I think if you've got a Rangi Chase in your squad, is anybody a dark horse when you've got a guy of that talent in there? You know, they've got some very, very gifted players. Even if you just look at the halfbacks, they've got Rangi, Matty Beharrell is a terrific player at this level, and Watson Boas, the PNG international. So 3 players there that comfortably fit into most championship squads. So when you look at that, you think these guys should be right up there. And Graham Horne is a fantastic signing for them. Really skillful forward now in the back end of his career, playing for his brother Richard. Ross Pelty has come from Bradford and can come on and cause havoc from the substitute bench. So they have all the ingredients, really, to be challenging the top 2 that we mentioned. We saw at weekend, though, they nearly fell out of the Challenge Cup against Amateurs Thornhill. So perhaps not got the combinations quite up and running yet. But if you run down their squad, you know, even a Sam Smeaton and a Jack Logan there in their back line, if you look at the players they've got, really, they should be challenging anybody in the league.
And the same could be said, I think, for Hunslet. It just, they had a great start to the season last year and just faded away towards the end, didn't they, for whatever reason. The ownership side of the club, that's all been settled this week, as I understand it. I mean, not that it was a distraction anyway, because Gary Thornton obviously is 100% focused on the pitch matters. I mean, how's their recruitment been this season, do you feel, with the close season?
Very, very impressive. I think when you get a Dom Brambani in from Batley at scrum half there, that lays a marker down straight away. Again, another player. He's won 2 grand finals at championship level with Sheffield and spent the majority of his career up at the top end of the second tier. So he's a great signing. He's got his former Sheffield halfback partner, Simon Brown, alongside him as well now. So those two will be integral to everything they do. And in the pack, Alex Rowe, he can cause destruction in any defence again in the championship. So I'm sure he's going to have a field day on certain afternoons in League One. So again, much like Doncaster, I think they've got the players in their squad to not fear anybody. It's whether they can get the consistency and get their combinations right and be up there challenging your Barrow and Newcastle.
Now, there's 2 clubs who've got head coaches who, I think, towards, you know, last season were desperate to get a pre-season under the belts. Chris Foreman at Workington we'll discuss shortly, but Rhys Lovegrove at Keighley. they're interesting this year, aren't they, Keighley? Obviously, there's no points deduction this year. They're quite intriguing to look at.
Definitely, and when they go out and make a signing like Jake Webster, who's played at the top end of the NRL and in Super League for most of his career, that's a statement of intent too. I think Richie Hawkyard going back there, he went back, didn't he? Then he retired again, and now he's decided he'll play again. But on his day, you know, he's a top player at this level. So they've got two real good recruits there. As you say, a full close season under Lovegrove. They will firmly expect to improve and be right in that playoff mix throughout the year, I'm sure.
Now, last year on the Total Rugby League show, we had Jermaine Coleman on a couple of times, actually, because it was one of them seasons, wasn't it, for the Scholars? Can they recreate that and maybe stay in the playoffs this year, or do you think it's going to be ultra-competitive in that mid-table pack and too close to call?
Well, I think the competition is going to be better than last year. I'll say that straight away. I think with your Barrow coming down there, Newcastle spending a bit more money, and Hunslet, at Doncaster, Keighley all look stronger. I think it's going to be a tougher competition generally. And whether Scholars have improved their squad enough to beat those clubs or not remains to be seen. But they got off to a great start last year. If they can do that again and maintain it, then you know they're going to be a factor in all this. They've got some really good outside backs there. They've signed Welsh international Dalton Grant. Elias McCann is already there. Cameron Pierce-Paul comes across. He's a talented lad as well. So if they can get the ball to those players in the right areas, you know they'll be a threat to anybody. I think a good start is key for them, and then they've got to try and maintain it.
I'm going to suggest the next team that they could be labelled as expect the unexpected, the North Wales Crusaders. You wouldn't put it past them, would you, I suppose, to just nip into the playoff spots during this season?
No, they're fully capable of it. I think they'll be in and around that bottom end of the playoffs. And you know, if they can win enough matches at home, then you know they're going to be one of the runners and riders. And the lad I'm looking forward to seeing how he plays is Brad Billsborough, a young halfback who was a St. Helens product. He went up to Whitehaven, played a bit at Swinton, and then he's been in Australia. Now, he's a really talented lad. And if they get him firing and at the top of his game, that will certainly improve their playoff chances. You've still got guys like Tommy Johnson and Stephen Roper around as well. There's plenty of experience in Anthony Murray's squad. So if Billsborough can add a bit of an X factor, they're going to be an interesting one to watch, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And also interesting in a lot of ways, the Rochdale Hornets this year. Andy Mays is coming there with his team. Been a bit of a transformation, hasn't it, with regards to the noises being made off the pitch, but also on the pitch is Matt Collins just reshaped the squad. So what can we expect from Rochdale in this early stages of their new era?
I think they are, and I'm speaking as a Rochdale lad, so I'm allowed to say some of this stuff. I think they're the biggest enigma for the competition, and I don't think even themselves probably know what to expect. So they're now set up and more stable off the field. I think Mays has been very public in saying that, you know, there are no great expectations this season. It has to be a rebuilding year for Rochdale. But Matt Callan, for all his coaching career, bar last year, really has been a winner at whatever level he's coached at. And he'll want to get involved in that playoff race, I'm sure. He signed Sean Penkovic at hooker, who he won a championship grand final with at Halifax a decade ago. Now, he's proved at Workington that he's still got what it takes to win matches at this level. Sam Hopkins, Jack Higginson and Sam Freeman are good signings as well. There's going to be a lot of amateur players in that team. But if they can manage to gel, they look like they'll be very fit and organised. If they can get together as a team, maybe they can gatecrash this playoff race and surprise a few people.
What about the West Wales Raiders? Kim Williams has obviously left, and what a compliment to the West Wales Raiders that, you know, he's become part of the integral part of the youth setup at Huddersfield. But it does come at the wrong time, really, in a way, for West Wales and their preparations for the new season. That said, Aaron Woods is there now, and he's got good experience coming from France. So can they build on last season?
Look, I hope so, and I know West Wales get a bit of stick in some quarters because obviously at different stages they've shipped a huge number of points. They did improve last year under Kim Williams, and you hope that would continue. We've got a change in coach now, and we'll see what effect that has on them. But I still believe the potential for a professional rugby league club down there is still very much in place. You know, they can produce players that will be good for the game overall. It is going to be tough for them on the first team front again. You know, we've seen at weekend the only professional team so far knocked out by an amateur club with Underbank turning them over down in Wales. That suggests it's going to be an uphill struggle for them again. But I hope the people involved there stick with it. I hope people in the wider sport see the bigger picture and not just the scorelines on Sunday, because there are young, talented rugby players down there who, given the opportunity, will help make rugby league better, I'm sure.
And finally then, Gareth, let's talk about Workington Town. Chris Foreman did a great job last year with pre-season under his belt. Can they recreate that?
It's going to be really interesting. I think he's a great appointment by them. Losing Penkovic is a blow, definitely, because he's such a good organiser and does know how to win match at this level. But they've made a few interesting signings as well. You know, Elliot Hall, this lad who scored a load of tries for Coventry last year, it'll be really interesting to see how he goes. And I just think having Thorn there from the start is very, it looks like he's taking an overall view of the club. He wants them to develop off the field. He wants local young players to get back involved and want to play for Workington. And from people I speak to within Super League who work with Chris Thorn, they say he's an excellent technical coach as well. So I expect them to be back in that playoffs race and try and get involved in it, maybe push further up if they have a good run of injuries. And I hope that they continue on this long-term vision of making it a stronger club in the local community and building for years to come.
Gareth Walker there, and that League One season kicking off this weekend with one match, North Wales against Doncaster. There we go. Thank you, Gareth, for joining us. One last interview to bring you for this week's show, and that surrounds the community game in Manchester. The Manchester Rangers have moved plans forward for a really big jumpstart of the community game with help from Salford Red Devils, Warrington, the Rochdale Hornets, the RFL and Swinton, so certainly all heading in the right direction. And on Tuesday, I caught up with Manchester Rangers Foundation Manager Matt Valentine for more.
Yeah, we've gained a bit of traction with all the plans, which is great. So, a sort of an overview of the plans. It's effectively a programme to increase community participation throughout Manchester. We're working in partnership now with a number of organisations, and we're covering almost the greater Manchester region, the likes of Tameside, Stockport, Bury, Salford, Bolton, Lynn down in Cheshire. But as part of a group, we're covering quite a wide region to introduce almost a development style playing offer. So it's not to sort of detract from anything that's already in place with the North West Carries or the North West Men's League, etc., etc. It's almost that development level game where you've got people potentially new to the sport who maybe play other sports and they're just looking to try and get a bit of rugby league under the belt, and that's what we're looking to offer, something that's accessible to those people. In terms of what we've done ourselves since the time, we've now got two new clubs right on the sort of the brink. We've got Tameside Knights that are based over in Ashton. We've got Withenshaw down in South Manchester, and they're pretty much ready to go now. We were just finalising a few little bits and bobs off, and hopefully they will be having some active participation this season. We've got Bellevue Bees continuing, they're growing all the time. And then we're looking at other areas as well. So it's positive, it's really positive. We're sort of looking to really, really increase that participation level, as I mentioned, and just get the numbers of people playing rugby league growing.
And it's exciting as well because, like you touched upon earlier, you partnered up with the likes of the Salford Red Devils Foundation, the Foundation at Warrington, Swinton Lions and Rochdale Hornets. And basically, it's a bit of a kickstart, isn't it, for rugby league in Greater Manchester, especially at primary school and secondary school level?
It is, yeah, that's it. So we're effectively looking to get more kids playing. And it's all those organisations you mentioned working together as one collective to do that. It's something that needs to happen to give some new blood into the game, really. It's a case of we're not trying to fix anything that's not broken. So, you know, your existing strong clubs will continue to play within their own competitions. And we're just looking to give a bit of an entry level for new clubs or new players. It may be development teams of existing clubs. Just somewhere where kids can come and play. And it's not that competitive must win at all costs scenario. It's very much based on development. It's very much based on just getting kids playing a bit of game time. So yeah, we've got a nice flexible offer there that we can roll out and engage new people.
Yes, absolutely. And obviously when we last spoke, we were talking about the full-time development officer who's going to be in place. That's happened now. Henry Davis of the Salford Red Devils in reserve, but also formerly of Manchester Rangers as well. What's that going to bring to the table? That you know, a permanent development officer doing the rounds and that kind of thing. That's vitally important.
Oh, it's massively important. Yeah, as a foundation ourselves, to get out there and get kids engaged. At the end of the day, you can lay all these plans, but if you don't go out there and start engaging the kids, then you're not going to go anywhere. We'll be in schools through Henry and through myself and a couple of other coaches. We'll be out into the schools and coaching, and getting kids then signposted over to these new community clubs. So the programme effectively has a primary and a secondary offer, whereby we'll coach in the schools. We'll then say to the kids, this is your nearest club if you want to go and play, and then hopefully transfer them from there.
So let's talk about the immediate future. There is an open forum which is to be held this Saturday, the 15th of February at 10 a.m. What's the aim with that?
It's basically a two-way information share, really. So there'll be a presentation from the RFL around the intentions of the group and what we're looking to achieve. But it's also an opportunity for anyone who's either interested in getting involved or has some ideas around what could be good to sort of come along and give their two pence, really. We're creating this offer for the community, so it's important that there's an input from the community, because at the end of the day, it's them that's going to be benefit from it. So anyone who's sort of involved in community rugby league or wants to be involved in community rugby league, get down there and sort of have your say on what you think this offer should look like, I would say.
It's all snowballing now. The momentum's there, it looks like, certainly. So what do you think the ultimate aim should be? Because, you know, we've got the Bellevue Bees who are growing year on year, and like you say, we've got some other junior clubs starting up in Tameside and Wythenshawe and probably beyond as well within Manchester. So what do you think the blueprint looks like for the sport within Greater Manchester over the next 5 to 10 years as all this now starts to develop and move forward?
I think in terms of Greater Manchester, certainly Manchester specifically is our sort of remit area. I think there's room for a Manchester League, to be quite honest with you. We know how vast the population of Manchester is, and there's no reason why we can't have 6, 7, 8 teams within our regions that are competing against each other in a local league. And I just think that'd be great for all involved. It's, you know, games where you're travelling 20 minutes either way and you're playing regular fixtures against local people. It can only be good for not only the sport but the people within Manchester to have that opportunity. And once you get that good community foundation, that's when we start looking at, right, we're going to produce some players there, and we'll have a talent pool coming through, a completely new talent pool that has never really been tapped into for the sport coming through, and that just adding value to the competition at every level, whether that be new community teams, both junior, open age, whether that be players that are going on then to play at the likes of Rochdale, Oldham, Swinton, or making a step up to Salford or playing elsewhere in Super League. And I think that's ultimately our measure as an organisation, to spread our sport and get more people playing at every single level we can.
Foundation manager at the Manchester Rangers, Matt Valentine, there, and you can follow them on Twitter. That's at Manchester RLCF. So that's exciting. Right, final plugs before we go. Aaron, where are you off to this weekend?
I'm going to Wigan on Thursday and Hull on Sunday.
There we go. Alex, where are you off to this weekend? Anything good and anything in your world happening other than the Nines?
No.
Park run on Saturday.
I'll be there at Huddersfield Park run within a while.
I might go.
Autographs available on demand. And selfies, of course.
I'm at the big TV game Friday night, South Huddersfield.
Excellent.
And I'm going to watch my football team, Halifax Town, on Saturday, play Sutton United.
Wow.
And I am going to the Shea 2 days running, so I'm at Halifax Dewsbury.
Busy weekend for everyone then.
One for punishment.
Yeah.
Could argue that.
Well, that's it for this week's Total Rugby League show. Remember, for all the latest news from the world of rugby league, totalrl.com, and look out for League Express out on Monday. But Aaron, a big thank you for joining us. Alex, pleasure as always. And Matthew Shaw. And wherever you're going this weekend, make sure you have fun. Bye-bye.